Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a sheep.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
We're Fernando Santos Leeds, the football family follows. I am your host, David Snaid, and fresh from the Portugal manager dropping Cristiano Ronaldo in favour of new sensation Gonçalo Ramos for our last 16 demolition of Switzerland last night, the powers that be in the 42 have also made a change to the lineup for this episode. Gavin Cooney's services are not acquired today. Rumour has it he's out searching in Doha for Piers Morgan as we speak for a sit-down to vent, or he could just have a hectic time in a change in hotels and needs a well-earned day off. In his place, we have called on former Ireland international Keith Tracy, and joining us as always is our very own Pepe, Cove Ramblers manager Shane Keegan. How are you, lads?
You're going to have to explain that one to me. Is it just the baldness, is it?
Well, no, just, you know, another veteran. Pepe still going strong, scored last night. You know,
I'll take that. I don't know if I'd have the same streak of madness now that Pepe'd have in him, but I'll take that.
I don't know. I was hearing some things about the Cove Ramblers dinner dance. I think you were having you were on one at that. Now I heard it was a bit of a mad one.
myself and Micheál Martin ripping up the dance floor.
Oh Jesus! Right, listen on that. But so on the show today, we're going to recap Morocco's historic penalty shootout win over Spain. The side who started the tournament with 7-0 demolition had us all poured in with their football, but then couldn't even score a penalty. The quarterfinal pairings are confirmed, and as well as looking ahead to some of those tantalising toys, we will also look to the players whose transfer values and maybe their expectations have soared because of this tournament. So then, to start with, Keith, and seeing as you are making your debut, I know you want to settle down with a nice first touch. What did you make of Portugal last night?
They were unbelievable, weren't they? It's all the stuff that surrounds them with the Messi thing. With the Ronaldo thing. You know, is it going to affect them on the pitch? But, you know, I was asked a question a few days ago. Are Portugal a better team with or without Ronaldo? And I think it was emphatic that they're a better team without Ronaldo. I think there's so many players that come out of their shell. Bruno Fernandes, funny enough, for the world-class talent that he is himself, he seems to be, he comes out of his shell a little bit more. It's like he feels the team needs him when Ronaldo's not around, and he just seems to come to the forefront. And Gonzalo Ramos with his hat-trick, like the first goal was unbelievable, wow. Wasn't it? Just straight into the top corners, no backlift, bang. And I really enjoyed the third one as well. His first touch was excellent, draws the keeper out, and then just a little calm dink over him. So he really showed his class. He's only 21 as well. So for Ronaldo to be coming off the conveyor belt, for him to be coming through, Portuguese football's in a really good place. And, you know, I didn't see them as real contenders for the World Cup, because I thought Ronaldo would be the spearhead of the attack and they wouldn't have the work rate needed. Teams would get an awful lot of possession against them because they couldn't do a high press. But if you're putting if you put Ramos in there for the next couple of games, and you're looking at them, they beat the Swiss, and the Swiss aren't bad now. I know they got hammered last night, but the Swiss in general aren't a bad team.
Exactly.
They beat Morocco. If they beat Morocco, they're into the semi-finals of the World Cup. You know that. I know Morocco have proved to be a very, very stubborn, very strong team, but you know, if you said to Cristiano Ronaldo and Fernando Santos, you beat Switzerland, you beat Morocco, and you're into the semi-finals of the World Cup, it's a fairly easy enough path for them. So look, they have four world-class players for me, with Ruben Dias, Cancelo, Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes. They're four world-class players. There's a couple of question marks over other players, but yet they really came to the forefront. And I wouldn't say, I'd still have England. I still think England are better than them. And if England somehow got over France, I think they could beat Portugal in the semi-final. But look, it's going to be tough, very, very tough. But I can't put my finger on it, but I just don't fancy them to win it.
And what about you, Shane? Do you think, like, the point there that Keith makes about maybe perception changing, has perception changed now a little bit of Portugal and what they could be capable of when maybe they're not focusing on that? Because I'll be honest, at the start of the tournament, when we were doing our kind of predictions for what might happen, and one of the questions was, oh, what team might be a disappointment or what major team could be a disappointment? And I had said Portugal, just because I thought they might just stick with Ronaldo, but Santos has had the guts to actually drop him and try and change it, and they did look a bit of a different proposition.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to say if you go back to those questions at the start, I think I was going the other way. The smile you're seeing at the moment is the smile of a man who has Bruno Fernandes back to 33-1 for player of the tournament.
Have you?
Threw a tenner on all right at the start. No, I said on here, I said the same when I was on with OTB. I don't know, I just had a sneaking suspicion that they would go as far as the semi-finals. And look, I probably didn't expect it to happen in the manner that it did. I to be honest with you, I thought Ronaldo would fire. I thought I could see it being a big swan song from him and him doing really, really well. Now, it's ended up going a very, very different way, but with the same outcome, which is them doing very, very well. But that was a massive call last night, David. It really, really was. Like, it, you know, people would say it was the obvious thing to do, but it still takes huge balls to actually go ahead and do it. Because, like, if he starts Ronaldo last night and they go out, well, people will be, you know, annoyed at him and disappointed and all that, but they won't be massively pointing the finger of blame at him. Whereas by going the route he went last night, that was a huge risk. If they were beaten last night, he would be a laughing stock of Portugal. He really, really would. It was a massive call. It couldn't have paid off in a better way.
Part of me was thinking when he made it, was that him thinking, you know what, fuck it, like, I'm probably going to be gone after this tournament, because he's been there already, he's already won the Euros, he's already won the Nations League, he's been there for a while, he's probably thinking, you know what, if we're going out, I want to go out on my terms.
Yeah, it helps, yeah, it helps, the kind of no fear factor from him, I suppose, it definitely does help. Now, some of the other calls he made are equally questionable and head-scratching. I mean, I don't know. Has there been any injury reported with João Cancelo, or was he just dropped? Like, that's mental. Like, João Cancelo's best fullback in the world near enough, and he was dropped. Ruben Neves, I thought, had been doing pretty well as well. Dropped as well. So, some massive, massive calls. And but you talk about being vindicated. Holy Jesus, he couldn't have been more vindicated in any way whatsoever. It was unbelievable the way it played out for him. But, yeah, look, Morocco are no pushover, as we've seen. But it does look like we're looking at Portugal in the semi-final now, potentially against either France or England, isn't it?
A bit of a tangent, Keith, right? So I'm trying to think, in your own career, when you maybe get a sense that a manager might be nearing the end, have you ever seen it where the manager just said, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to change things up here, because they just know that I'm going to be finishing up?
I have seen it once or twice with managers. I've seen it under Darren Ferguson, at pressing him. I remember we got beat and we were in the dressing room, and he came in and just threw an absolute wobbler. But he was picking players out one by one. He was like, you're no good. You'll never play for me again. You're a muppet. And then he'd skip one or two and then come to somebody else. But we sat down when he left the dressing room. We sat down as a bunch of players, and Sean St. Ledger was there. And we listened. We were like, listen, this guy's not a bad guy. We haven't played well. And we went in and we apologised to him. He came back in and it all got a bit calmed down. But yeah, he let his tongue go that time. I think he was going out the door, but we ended up speaking him into it, and he got sacked about a month later anyway, so maybe he should have left. It was yeah, but he really let go of his tongue that time. That was probably the one time I've seen it.
But couldn't that be a good thing in terms of, and we don't know what's happened, but there's been rumours and talk about stuff happening in the Portugal camp from the start with Ronaldo, but also around it. But couldn't that be a good thing? Do you know what, maybe something's being said and there can be that bit of a clear out or clear the air, and maybe for a little while players can react to that in Portugal's sense, maybe.
Well, I seen the thing with Bruno Fernandes, the handshake with Ronaldo looked a little bit frosty after the interview. And look, if the one person who came out of that interview who would have been feeling good was probably Diego Dallo. He was the only one who got a little bit of praise. So he's probably thinking, oh well, if one of the best players in the world fancies me, he's gone from strength to strength. But the likes of Bruno Fernandes, somebody who's a superstar in his own right, he's not on Ronaldo's level, but he's a superstar in his own right. And yeah, I think that there is friction within that squad. But and we're saying that Fernando Santos made the decision to drop him. Fernando Santos didn't drop him because of footballing reasons. He dropped him because of the way he reacted when he got taken off. So had Ronaldo not has misbehaved as much as he has, I think his attitude from United has rolled into Portugal. And it's just not going to be put up with, because he's not that big fish anymore. He's not the one that gets them out of holes anymore. So his football, it can be replaced at the minute.
I don't know, Keith. Do you not think his performance was poor enough to justify being dropped anyway, aside from the fact that he threw a bit of a sulk?
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Shane. I think on football terms alone, he warranted being dropped. But I don't think Fernando Santos would have dropped him.
Okay,
With what he did, it made Fernando Santos' decision a little bit easier, because, yeah, I'm not having this. And he knew, he obviously had Ramos in the background, a 21-year-old who's not a bad player. So he knew what he was doing. But I think if Ronaldo had been humble when he was taken off and took it well, like he should have, like a captain should have, I think he would have played. And I think the Swiss game would have been an awful lot tighter had Ronaldo played. So, you know, it's probably a good thing in the end for the Portuguese.
But that's it, Shane, isn't it? Like, I think there's very little sympathy for Ronaldo. Well, in most quarters, obviously, Piers Morgan's obviously bawling his eyes out probably, but like, there's very little sympathy for him just because of how he's actually acted with this. Like, all this thing of, you know, how he's behaving, is that's what's made him a great player in the first place. But I think that's a bit of a cop-out because he's, I actually think he's been behaving very unprofessionally in, like, in how he's dealt with stuff.
Sure, there's no doubt. It's been completely and utterly unprofessional. I wonder, maybe I'm giving him too much credit here, but I wonder, did the penny drop between the first goal and the second goal? Because there was a marked difference in how he reacted when Portugal scored the first goal compared to the second goal. Like, he looked proper sulky and almost unhappy when the first goal was scored, whereas from there on, he kind of copped onto himself a little bit. And I'm wondering, you know, when he was sitting there, is he thinking to himself, I need to try and show that I'm not sulking, that I'm not pouting if I want any more minutes in this bloody yoke.
That's what you're probably thinking. Jason, more goals, I get the better chance I have of coming on and getting Eusebio's record.
Yeah. Look, you know Ronaldo, it's all in his head, it's all about legacy. It's not about how the team does, it's all about his own personal legacy. And if he has any cop on about himself whatsoever, if this is going to be his last international tournament, like, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Portugal are going to be in the final. Like, does he want to be a fella who's completely peripheral and out of the picture altogether if and when that day comes, or does he want to be a guy who, okay, may not start but could come on and score the winning bloody goal? Like, that's up to him based on how he handles all this.
So they absolutely smashed Switzerland yesterday, but they're going to be coming up against a side who in the last eight games have conceded one goal, and that was an own goal against Spain. For all the possession they had against Morocco, like, they had, was it two shots on maybe on target or two shots in the game or something? It was incredible. But like, in terms of that for Keaton, I don't know what you think on that, but do you think Portugal now, they have a bit of momentum, they have maybe that bit of confidence that they would be able to put in a similar performance against Morocco? Or do you think Morocco, like, it's historic for them? We're literally just watching here now, there's like scenes in central London of loads of Morocco fans in Trafalgar Square with flags, they're all on statues and all. It just seems as if this is their Italian 90.
Yeah, look, I don't think... I expect Portugal to get past them. I don't expect it to be easy whatsoever. Look, Morocco, Hakim Ziyech coming back in, I think is obviously making a huge, huge difference. The manager made up with him and got him back into the squad. We all know Boufal from his time in the Premier League. He's not a bad player as well. And Hakimi at the back, and there's Roman Sois as well. So there's a decent sprinkling of talent in there. They're a very good defensive unit. They drop back and... what was it, 35% of the ball against Spain, and not a bother to them. And they were actually more productive. That was the good thing. Spain, I think, had two shots on target in the 90 minute. Morocco had three, which is, you know, what's the point in having the ball for 75% if you're only going to take three shots within the 90 minutes? I'd rather, you know, the Moroccan mentality will be the same going into the Portuguese game as it was against the Spanish. We're going to suffer in possession. We'll do all the running. We'll do all the hard yards. But when we get it, we can hurt this team. And I think that will be evident. And Pepe at the back, although he's scoring and is playing well, a 39-year-old has got to be targeted in the World Cup. It just has to happen. And if you can somehow isolate him and get him 1v1, you can maybe get some change out of him. But then he's got Ruben Dias next to him, who reads the game so well and will help him and cover him. So I think it'll be a great game. I can see that being another stalemate. Morocco making it a little bit horrible, more of a midfield battle, really, really scrappy, and then probably penalties again, and we're into the lottery.
I wonder, Shane, right, so we've obviously spoken about Spain and how they play, but with that Morocco game, and now they're playing Portugal, I kind of get the feeling that in the Portugal team, there's a few more players who take risks than Spain. Spain seems very much like process in terms of pass, and there was a lack of penetration. I think in this Portugal team, what maybe could draw Morocco out a little bit or be a bit different is, like Bruno Fernandes or even João Felix, Bernardo Silva, there's players there who maybe can take a bit more of a risk with their passing.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. Look, obviously, for all of Spain's strengths, the problem is they seem to just continue to create the same kind of player over and over and over. And they don't really have a kind of somebody who just wants to go at you and try and open an opposition up. But now, look, the one thing, again, like, it makes a mockery. It actually, to be honest with you, David, right, it kind of makes a mockery of management that the Moroccan manager can come in August bloody August and now finds himself swanning into to the quarterfinal of a World Cup and probably the biggest overachievers at the tournament. I mean, it's phenomenal that he has managed to get such a solid defensive unit created there so quickly, however he's managed to do it. Now, reading up about him, he's a serial winner. Like, he's won a huge amount at club level already this year before stepping into the role. So he's obviously, he knows what he's about. And they are going to make it very, very difficult for Portugal. There's no doubt about it. That style, as Keith described, dropping off, sitting deep, they know what they're about, burst out on a counter-attack. Look, in all likelihood, it is going to have to be via penalties. You know, it probably is, but are they capable of taking them that far? I don't know. I would agree with you. I think, look, the little bit of magic that Bernardo Silva or Bruno Fernandes has, or like even see Leao coming, I know I keep going on about him, you see Leao coming off the bench last night, my God, like he's some talent and he can't even get in the side. Look, if they're forced to go wide and have to cross after cross, well then I think you could see Ronaldo back on the pitch pretty quickly. I think he could get a lot of the second half if they have to go to that sort of a game plan, which Morocco could kind of send them to. But I do think they'll get through, but I don't think it'll be any cakewalk, that's for sure.
I'm gonna put you, Keith, in Hakimi's position. What are you doing for that penalty? Are you going to do the Panenka, or are you going to just blame it?
Oh, I'm smacking it as hard as I can. I took one penalty in my whole career. It was a pre-season game against Sporting Lisbon for Blackburn, and I smashed it straight down the middle, and the keeper dived and it hit his knee and went over the bar. But the Sporting Lisbon player come up and missed. And then our next player, the fella called Sergio Peters, who was at Blackburn at the time, he tried a Panenka and the keeper caught it. And then the Sporting Lisbon fella scored. Mark Hughes came in. He made a beeline for him. He didn't care whatsoever. He actually used me as an example. He said, if you're going to miss, you miss like him. You don't do what you did. And Sergio Peter was never seen at Blackburn again. So I was warned off the Panenka early doors.
I was going to say, right, so like the height of my pressurised penalty situations is Division 3 in the UCFL. So like there is no pressure there. You're taking a penalty in the park. But like in terms of maybe you've taken one penalty, Keith, but like other players in your career, like, what is there a thing where when you would have been involved in penalty shootouts, or there's a penalty in a game where certain players just, you know, they don't want it? Like, the players just, what is it about missing a penalty that kind of gets in players' heads? Is it just depression?
I think it's up to the certain player. Like, certain strikers would think that's a penalty, lovely, that's an easy chance for me to score a goal and, you know, grab the headlines. I would be thinking, everybody expects me to score, I'll probably end up missing, and I don't want that side of it. That's just the way my head works. So I always shied away from penalties. I'm happy enough for a free kick because people didn't really expect you to score. So I was, you know, I was always just wired up that little bit differently. But I always love strikers who put their hands up and was like, yeah, I'll take it. And as long as you're confident, if you miss it, I wouldn't get on your back, because it's one of those things. It's a bit of a mind game, and you can't really practice it. I know Luis Enrique said Spain were practicing penalties, practice 1,000 penalties. It didn't really help them any much, did it? Because you can't, with the pressure of the walk-up as well, the walk-up feels so long. It's only from the halfway line to the 18-yard box, but it's horrible. It really is. It's gut-wrenching. And the whole time I'm walking up, I'm thinking about, you know, don't miss. And the one thing you're always told is pick a spot and don't change your mind.
Yeah.
I'm constantly changing my mind as I'm walking up to the ball, so... I'm mentally too weak for that sort of stuff. I just stayed away.
But as a manager, Shane, you know, in terms of that, like, practice, is it one of them where you can't recreate that? And even in a World Cup, I can only imagine, like, looking at, like, and even with Hakimi, it's mad. Like, he was born in Spain to Moroccan parents. So there's that element to it as well where, like, you can only imagine what's going through his head where, like, this fella grew up in Spain.
Yeah, look, the first thing I go back to is, what constitutes practice? Like, what is actual practice? Is just taking penalty after penalty and varying where you're putting it each time and that, is that actually practice? Like, that's not. It's not. That, to me, that doesn't count as practice. Like, if you go to... Now, it's very, very rare you'll ever hear me referring to rugby, but...
Yeah, if you go to Johnny Wilkin... We don't need this crossover. But just be quiet. You know, just be quiet there now while you're having this chat.
No, I'm sticking with this now. I'm going with this. You go to Johnny Wilkinson, right? Arguably one of the greatest kickers ever placed ball, right? Like, he had an absolutely set defined technique to the nth degree, like, and he had this the guy Dave Allred was his coach, and like there was a proper process there, an out and out flawless process that he repeated time after time after time after time. Now, okay, he doesn't have to factor in the goalkeeper, and you know, is the goalkeeper moving around and all of that kind of stuff, but to me, you know, if I was an England, if I was Gareth Southgate, I would have gone to the likes of a Dave Allred and said, well, you know, how can we actually practice penalty kicks here? How can we actually practice it to the real, real, real nitty gritty of how many steps back you take, you know, how many steps forward you take, what part of the boot you're using, so that, and try and make it as much of a process as you possibly can. After all that, then I couldn't agree more with Keith. The mentality of a player is absolutely vital. I mean, it's why Matt Letizia, you know, like one of the most confident, laid back, you know, chilled footballers we've ever seen. That's why he was phenomenal at penalties. In a way, he didn't care. And because he didn't care, that's why he was absolutely outstanding at it. And I'll tell you the one thing you have to watch out for, David, speaking from a manager's point of view. The one you have to watch out for is sometimes when you go, maybe obviously at this level, they're not going to see who wants a penalty at the last minute. They probably have it all planned out, right? But even in training, when you're saying, right, lads, if this goes to a penalty shootout, who wants a penalty? You'll have one or two fellas who see themselves as a leader within the group. You know, I can't be cowardly here. I have to be seen to put my hand up and show that I'm a leader within the group and I'm willing to take one. Whereas you as a manager in your heart and soul know, but you're shy at them. Like, do you know, I can't,
but that's actually a good point, right? So I wonder then, should that be part of a manager and a coach and staff's thing where they say, well, do you know what, right, do you know, these are the penalty takers, this whole thing of it normally is, right, who wants to take one, do you want to take one, but surely it should be a case of knowing, well, actually, even though you say you want to take one, you're doing this almost out of pride, don't.
Yeah, but the manager can't make a fella take one who doesn't want one. So my take on it would be, ask them who's happy to take one, let them put their hands up, but then you pick and choose the fellas you want from the fellas who have their hands up. So now you can, that captain fella or that leader fella who wants to take one to show courage, you can just bypass him now.
Right, so there's a fair bit of chat about penalty shootouts, and the likelihood is, as we get to this stage, that there'll be more, because obviously we're going to be, the quarterfinals are going to start on Friday, so we're going to have Croatia-Brazil at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, then we're going to have the Netherlands-Argentina on Friday night. Netherlands-Argentina, that could be a cracking game. Then Saturday, it'll be concluded, then we're going to have, obviously, as you said, Morocco versus Portugal and England versus France. On England versus France, right, I was listening to quotes and it made me think of, there's none more zealous than a convert. But Declan Rice says that England don't get enough credit, that other teams do what they have done and it said it's a masterclass. You mentioned at the start, Keith, what's your reading of this England-France game and where England are at the moment?
I think England are flying, to be honest with you. The 3-0 win over Senegal, I think they made Senegal look really ordinary, and they're a stubborn team, hard to break down, but They got through them fairly easily, and they were the strongest qualifiers out of all the groups. They finished with +7 goal difference and 7 points. Nobody managed to outscore them. They only conceded 2 goals, and one of them was an extremely dodgy penalty against Iran, which I don't think should ever have been given. So, yeah, look, you won't hear me saying this too often, but I think the English deserve a little bit of credit here. I think they're doing really well. Look, we all know the real test is coming on Saturday against France. If they can get past France, like I say, I fancy them to beat Portugal, but the France game is going to be massive. They've already spoke about the matchup of Kylian Mbappe and Kyle Walker. That's going to be pivotal if you can keep Kylian Mbappe quiet. And I'm hearing rumours today that Mbappe didn't train. He's taking an extra recovery day, so I don't know whether maybe he's feeling a little injury somewhere. And I know Kyle Walker's only back from a hernia operation as well, so I know they're saying he's 100% fit. Can he really be 100% fit already after going under the knife? What is it? Maybe a month ago? I'm not so sure. So, look, I think it's going to be a great game. I think he's going to revert back to a back five. And, you know, interesting to see what Shane might think of this. I'd actually play Kieran Trippier right back as the right wing back. And I play Kyle Walker as the right-sided centre-half. And I tell Kieran, every time Kylian Mbappe gets the ball, you go and engage him. And if he skips past it, we'll have Coyle on the cover every single time. And because Coyle is so quick, Kieran will take, like, you go and make contact with him, bump him, do something. Don't give him a free run at Coyle, and then Coyle can sweep up all the time. Look, that in, that sounds great on paper. It's not as easy as that, but that's maybe something I would go with. And but then you're leaving Dembele 1v1 with Shaw, which across is not great either. So there's so many different dangers all over the pitch.
But what about that, Shane? I know, like you said during the week, kind of maybe attack could be the best form of defence on that, in terms of actually throwing in Trent Alexander-Arnold to kind of give France something different to think about on that. But what's your, is that giving you, kind of giving you something else to think about?
Yeah, look, it's definitely a good way of handling Mbappe. I suppose the problem with any setup is, you know, the old phrase that a bed sheet is only so long. If you're pulling it up to cover the top half, yeah, your feet are going to be sticking out at the bottom. And where the feet are sticking out at the bottom, there is for England to go with three centre backs. That probably means they can only go with two in the centre of midfield if they want to maintain the idea of a player either side of Harry Kane. And Mbappe has been brilliant. Absolutely, he's been absolutely outstanding. He has been their outstanding player. I just think Griezmann has also been top class, and I think if they go 3v2 in the centre of the field, well, now that could really allow Griezmann to go to town as well. There's no easy answer here with them. There really isn't. But on the flip side, England are looking very, very good themselves going forward. Do you know?
I was gonna say should it just be, you know what, just go toe to toe with them? Like, England probably have enough in attack. Like, surely the French are looking at that attack that England have and looking at Joe Bellingham and thinking that, Jez, you know what, this is a serious team as well. I already have Mbappe and all the rest of it, but do, I don't know, Keith, should it just be one of them where, you know what, just go toe to toe with it?
I'd love to see that. I'd love Gareth Southgate to get the gloves off and say, right, let's go toe to toe. If we're going to get beaten, it's going to be, you know, a high scoring game, and we'll see what happens after that. I just can't see it happening. I think it's over 50% of Gareth Southgate games that he reverts to a back five, and especially against bigger nations. And I think, you know, with Gareth Southgate being an ex-defender, I think he always thinks, how can I get a clean sheet as a platform to win the game? And they've been excellent with the four at the back. They really have. They're, like I say, 12 goals in the four games. They're outscoring everybody. I'd love to see him say, lads, go and win the game. Like, don't go and lose it, but... Like I said, I can't see it happening. And you can understand it, because like Shane said, Griezmann all of a sudden has found a little bit of form in a French jersey. Dembele is a big, big threat. And Mbappe is a huge threat as well. And Giroud, if you do drop back and say, like, we're not going to let Mbappe run behind us, they'll just pump balls into the box for Giroud, who's very, very good in the air. So, yeah, there's so many evils all over. You're trying to put fires out all over the pitch. But again, yeah, Saka, Kane, do you play Foden? Do you play Rashford? You know, I love Phil Foden. I love to see him playing. But Saka, surely he deserves to play. And Kane is going to play. So, yeah, I'd go with a 5-2-3. And I'd leave Rice and Henderson in front of the back five. And I'd leave Bellingham just ahead of them two. And he'd be the ball carrier. Every time we win the ball, he's going to be the link between the midfield and the front three. And he's young enough to do the runs as well.
I'd
just leave the back seven there. So you stop France from scoring. And then front four will go and win us the game.
I think even you mentioned Saka, like, 3 goals in 3 games. Like, when you're playing in that position, like, he seems to be very disciplined and understands the position, but he just has an effect. And as a winger, you know yourself, he just, like, for the player to be able to have an effect in the final third in the game is so important. That can be that difference and be that edge in a manager's thoughts when he knows, you know what, I know I can trust him to do a job, but also I know he can actually affect the game in the final third.
So would you leave Henderson out, would you? Keith.
I leave Henderson out begrudgingly, Shane. I thought he was excellent against Senegal. His goal was brilliant. I thought the way he was pressurising people, like springing out of the midfield every now and then to go and press people, was excellent. And I would put my arm around him and say, any other game, son, you would be still in. You deserve to stay in, but it's France. And I'm sorry. I need Bellingham. Declan Rice has been excellent. And so, I just think I'm probably looking at what I think Southgate will do rather than what I want to see, but
yeah.
I think he'll keep the back five and the two. I think he'd just be terrified.
Like, there's gonna be a serious amount of talent on show, but I wonder in terms of the tournament as a whole, and it always happens at World Cups in terms of players who make a bit of a mark or kind of even maybe reach a new level when they are playing, and obviously we'll get a move over. What do you reckon, or who do you think would be looking at this, Shane, for you, or thinking, you know what, there's going to be a move coming here now in January, because it's come at the perfect time as well, where there's obviously going to be a transfer window opening up soon. So I imagine there'll be already agents working in the background now to get that client to move.
Yeah, look, I suppose a couple of the obvious ones, obviously on the back of the Portugal game last night, I think Ramos is going to have a fair bit of interest, and Gakpo has certainly caught the eye. But no, I'd actually go with the Croatian centre half, a little bit different, but Vardiol or Guardiol, I'm not 100% sure how it's pronounced, but I just think he's been absolutely superb. He is as cool as a breeze. He really, really is. You know, he's been excellent in every game, but he seems to have it all. Like, he's excellent on the ball, yet he doesn't shirk away from the defensive side of things. He's winning balls in the air. He obviously had that tremendous last ditch tackle that he made in the group stages, just nicking it off. Whose toe was that? Can't remember. But he's been absolutely super. He really, really has. And I had read up a bit on Croatia coming into it, and a couple of kind of those who'd know Croatian football well had said that he looked an absolute superstar coming through at Dynamo Zagreb. But I mean, he went from Dynamo Zagreb to Leipzig for 19 million. Now, if you're asking what that man is valued at coming out the other side of this World Cup, it's, you know, 3-4 times that, without a doubt. It's 3-4 times that. And look, it's not like Leipzig are a small club. Maybe they can afford to hold on to him for another while. But I mean, looking even in the last 24 hours, I think I've read Chelsea, Manchester United, City, everybody's getting, all the Premier League top clubs are getting linked with him already. And to be fair, I can 100% see why. And it's going to be really, really interesting now to see him up against Brazil. Going to be really interesting to see, because if he has another good game there and stands out against Brazil and keeps Richarlison and Neymar and co in check to a certain extent, well, then you could add another zero at the end of his value, possibly, you know.
You mentioned Richarlison, like, he's literally scored two of the best goals in the tournament, probably one of the greatest goals, I'd say, of the, like, I remember Carragher giving out, what game was it? Remember when he was doing the kind of like the seal flicks with the ball on his forehead? Was that for Spurs, wasn't it? And then he got chopped down. But then he did it in the build up to the goal. It was sensational. I was even saw the interview as well from, but he's like, even Richarlison, I mentioned, he's someone who, even though you see him in the Premier League, he just seems to have gone to a different level or different kind of pedigree. What he's done so far with Brazil.
Yeah, but he has it, David. Like, the problem with Richarlison can play like that. I don't think it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that Richarlison can give a performance like that. The problem is, well, speaking as a Spurs fan or even watching him at Everton, you don't know from one day to the next what you're going to get from him. Like, he could give you a 10 out of 10 or he could give you a 5 out of 10, and you just don't know. So he's put, you know, he's probably given us two really strong performances so far for Brazil. But and he could be fantastic against Croatia again, but he could also pretty much not show up against Croatia. Like, this guy Gakpo could have him in his pocket, you know.
For you, Keith, who's kind of caught the eye or who's kind of come to your attention that's actually excited you a little bit?
I know the Germans have been very underwhelming, but the Musiala, the winger from Bayern, I think he's only 19 as well. He's been excellent to watch. I know the German front line has got a bit of stick, but he's keeping Leroy Sané out of the German team, which is, you know, he's a super player himself. And he's outshone Gnabry, who's a super player. I love watching him. Yeah, like Shane was saying, Spain don't have anybody that'll get the ball and just say, right, I'm going to beat you now. It's all pass. But Musiala, when he gets it, he isolates people and he just runs past them. He manipulates the ball really well. And he's somebody that I didn't know an awful lot about coming into the tournament, but I took note when I seen that Leroy Sané was on the bench and he was playing. So, well, this fella must be good. And I'm starting to watch him closely. And yeah, his ball control is excellent. The way he goes past people, just like they're not even there. He plays with very little fear. And there seems to be a great crop of youngsters coming through this World Cup, and we'll see them obviously for the next couple of tournaments. So yeah, Musiala, and obviously Bellingham has been excellent as well. I think he's probably an obvious one, but still only 18. Is he years of age? 18, 19?
19,
so, 19,
yeah.
Yeah, so
I think...
I think that probably the both of them are playing in Germany. I think you're probably looking at about 150 million for the two of them, but I don't think it'll be too long before we see the both of them in the Premier League.
Look, I was looking during the week and it made me a bit depressed. I think Bellingham hadn't even turned one when Rooney had that great kind of showing at Euro 2004. I was like, how can this be? How can this pot? How can that possibly be? Jesus Christ. In terms of what's happened then, obviously you've already mentioned the Germans being underwhelming and they've gone out, but obviously we're down to the business end now. Are you still sticking like Shane? Who was your prediction at the start? I managed to give about six different countries when I was doing my predictions. open-ended. But I did say Brazil, and part of the reason was obviously say the attacking talent, but also I thought it was a mad balance to the team as well, and they actually seem relatively good in defence. When you have Alisson, you can kind of maybe give away. You can be a small bit loose because he's probably the best one-on-one goalkeeper. But for yourself, I'll come to you on this in a second, Keith. But for you, Shane, who do you see from this last day who'll go on now?
Yeah, no, my original prediction is still thereabouts, which is Brazil-France final. I'd still be leaning towards that, to be honest. I haven't seen anything in Brazil or France to turn me off that prediction. England are maybe looking a little bit better than I thought they would, so I think they'll give them a decent test, but I just keep going back to that centre-back partnership. I just don't think it's good enough. I wouldn't be steering away. I think Brazil to beat France in the final, I'm sticking with David.
No, it's been for you, Keith.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with England just because they're still there. I said there from the start. And yeah, look, I think it's their best chance. I really do. With the World Cup starting in November, all their players are pretty much fit. They're all ready to go. They haven't had a long slog of, 38 games and then games in the Champions League. So, yeah, look, I think it's their best chance. All the wingers are turning up. Harry Kane's got on the score sheet. Saka scored. Foden scored. Grealish scored. Rashford has scored. So the attacking talent is there. I would share Shane's question marks over the centre-half pairing of especially Maguire. I know he was good against the USA, but he's starting to show little glimpses of himself again that you're thinking, oh God, is he going to strike again? So I think for that reason, again, they'll go back to it. They'll go to the back five against France. But look, if they can somehow keep Mbappe quiet, and I do think it's probably too simplistic a thing to say that France are a one-man team, but if you keep Mbappe quiet, you've pretty much covered about 90% of their threat. So, look, it's easier said than done, I know that. But, yeah, I'm going to get England to limp past France and then beat Portugal in the semis.
I was going to say, this thought now has just come to me. When you said Brazil-France final, Shane, could it be a Portugal-Argentina final as well, because they're on the other side of the draw, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
Jesus, imagine a Portugal-Argentina... We can maybe come back to this, but imagine a Portugal-Argentina final with Ronaldo on the bench and Messi starting. Oh my God. Well, listen, we'll hopefully be able to chat. We'll have a better idea of that after the weekend when we come back, because I think we'll probably have a pod after once we kind of know what the crack is with the semi-finals. So until then, Keith, thanks a million. Thanks very much.
No problem, anytime.
No worries. And Shane, we'll chat to you soon. Looking forward to hearing your exploits of whatever dinner dance you'll be going to over the weekend.
Cheers, David. Cheers, Keith.
Go on. Take care, lads.
Ah!